This is a CBC podcast.
Our next story of a scientist in the field takes us to the Marshall Islands, a chain of volcanic islands and coral atolls located in the central Pacific Ocean. The Philippines are over 4,700 kilometers to the west. Hawaii is much closer, just 4,200 kilometers to the east. The Marshall Islands are as beautiful as they are remote. They're also an important area for scientific research. In particular, their numerous coral reefs, which are spread out over hundreds of individual islands. Now, we've heard how many coral reefs around the world are in trouble due to warmer water temperatures and increasing ocean acidification, both due to climate change. One researcher studying those coral reefs this past summer is Sarah Cannon. Risking shark attacks, she dove three times a day to photograph and document changes in these reefs. Ms. Cannon is a master's student in the Department of Geography at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Hi, welcome to Quirks and Quarks.
Thank you so much.
What were your first impressions of the Marshall Islands?
It's kind of hard to explain. It's difficult to really know what to expect when you're going to someplace like that. So I've been fortunate to have worked in the Pacific before. I worked for the last 4 years over the summers in Yap in the Federated States of Micronesia. I was kind of expecting it to be a little bit more like that, where it's not very developed. There's not much that you can find there. So we used to bring our own snacks, our own food. But Majuro, where I was based, is actually very developed. There's about 30,000 people there. They have major grocery stores, and you can find things like tofu, quinoa, kale.
Wow.
You know, so it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. It's very remote, but it's still connected in a way that I wasn't really sure that I didn't expect.
What are the islands actually like?
It's interesting. They're very small and very low to sea level. So you can see most times when you're on the roadway, you can see both the ocean and the lagoon at pretty much all times. You can hear the waves from almost anywhere in the atoll. So it feels kind of like you're in a different world. But it's culturally very different, but it's also so similar in a lot of ways. People wear very Western clothes. People are connected to the internet. Everybody is obsessed with Facebook.
Now an atoll, that's a circular island, right, with a lagoon in the center of it. It's just the top of a volcano, is it that?
Exactly. It's actually the coral reef that formed around the outside of a volcano, and then the volcano has sunk over millions of years and left this ring that has formed land around a lagoon.
It's so far from home in many ways, even though you say people wear Western clothing and all of that. But did you find you had trouble getting used to local customs and traditions?
Not too much. It's funny because they kind of tend to surprise you. It's so Westernized in a lot of ways that it's really easy to forget sometimes that you're not in a different place. And then every once in a while, something will happen and you realize, oh, yeah, I'm not at home. You know, so it's
easy
to forget.
Can you give me an example?
Well, for one thing, people, when they say yes, usually they don't actually verbalize it. They just raise their eyebrows. And so sometimes you'll be having a conversation with somebody and they'll say yes, and it'll take you a minute to realize that they've actually already answered you.
You had an interesting toilet experience.
Yes. So one of the things that took a little bit, it definitely took some getting used to living there. And I did really love it. I enjoyed it a lot. But there are just some little weird quirks that you kind of have to get used to. And one of those things was that the toilets only flush at high tide. So
really?
Yes, it's because they're hooked up to the salt water, which makes sense, really, when you think about it. It conserves the fresh water. But nobody really told me that. For a long time, I just thought that my toilet didn't work and I was just using a bucket to flush. And then I finally figured out one day that somebody mentioned it to me offhand. And I was like, oh, that explains it. And maybe a week after I'd lived in my apartment, I finally figured it out. But yeah, I mean, the power goes off multiple times a week. Like, the internet never works. It's just things like that, little things that take some getting used to.
I understand there's some mythologies around the islands.
Definitely. So it's very Christian now. There are a lot of churches on Majuro, and in all of the outer islands, there's, I believe, at least one church on every island that are inhabited. And so it's interesting, though, to see. I've heard some stories. I didn't actually experience anything, but I've heard some stories. There's some things like that that still persist. So, for example, there are some places where you're not supposed to go on land or are not inhabited because the spirits live there. So you have to make sure you ask permission before you go anywhere.
Sounds like it was a real adventure for you. What were some of the more memorable moments of your time there?
Probably one of the most exciting things that happened was we were scuba diving on Arno Atoll, which is next to Majuro. And there are no dive boats in all of the Marshall Islands, as far as I know, or very few at least. And so we had chartered a fishing boat, and pretty much everybody there fishes. And so the two people who were on our boat, we had a captain and a co-captain, and they're both avid fishermen. pretty much every time we went anywhere, they were fishing. The whole time that we were driving, they'd be trolling off the back of the boat. Or even when we were at our dive sites, they would drop us off over the reef and then kind of drift offshore a little bit to where they could still see us when we came up, but where it was deep enough to be able to fish. And so they were fishing pretty much constantly. And so one day we were driving out to our dive site. They picked us up and we're driving and they're trolling behind the boat. They have two lines in the water. And one of the lines, the rods started whirring like there was something on it. So they stopped the boat and went to start reeling it in. And it became clear pretty quickly that it was a giant fish. Whatever it was huge. And so they had to stop the boat. My advisor had to actually run over and steer the boat to make sure that it would continue going in a straight line because both of them were required to pull this fish in. And eventually everybody on board gets involved. I'm trying to take pictures in the background. But one of the other students had to start helping reel this fish in. And it's really crazy. Like everybody on board is just running around trying to help with this giant fish. And off the side of the boat, we see something surfacing. And so I'm kind of watching, trying to figure out what that is. Nobody's really paying attention because they're all paying attention to this fish. And we think there was a pilot whale that was surfacing just off the side of our boat, kind of trying to figure out, I think, just what all the activity was. And eventually they end up reeling this fish in and the guy has to pull it up with a gaff because it's huge. And it was about 150-pound tuna fish that they pull on board. And so it's flopping around and everybody's kind of trying to get out of the way. And one of the fishermen comes up, picks up a baseball bat and just starts whacking it over the head. And I'm like, I'm standing in the background cringing, kind of trying not to look. And then they stab it because you have to bleed the fish or the meat goes bad apparently. And again, we were on our way to our dive site. So we were almost there at the time and we had all of our dive gear was on the deck of the boat while this was happening. And so there's just tuna blood going all over our dive gear. And I'm just watching it thinking about sharks. Like, this is not going to be good.
Right, yeah.
And so they sprayed it all off. And, you know, I was telling somebody earlier, I have my scuba mask has clear panels on the side so that you can kind of see out of the corner of your eyes what's happening, what's going on around you. And a couple of times I had some false alarms where one of my dive buddies had swam by and all I could see was this big dark shape. And I'd get totally afraid that there was a shark. So after watching this tuna blood go all over our dive gear, we hosed it off the best we could, went for a dive. But the whole time, all I could think about was sharks.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Sure. Fortunately, we didn't see. We just saw a couple small reef sharks, which we saw pretty much on every dive. But that was just...
Boy. But catching a large tuna like that, that's a pretty valuable catch.
Yeah. And fishing is huge there. So they do a lot of pelagic fishing. And actually, once a month, they have a fishing tournament. And this catch actually happened to be just maybe 2 days before the biggest fishing tournament of the year. And I felt so bad because if that tuna, if they had caught it during the tournament, it would have won. It was the biggest tuna wow. anybody had caught.
Okay, so after you get to the Marshall Islands, then you get on the fishing boat, catch a tuna along the way, get to your dive site. What were you actually studying there scientifically?
So I was there doing my master's research, and basically I'm trying to understand how local human activity is impacting the health of coral reefs. And so Majuro Atoll, there's two atolls right next to each other. Majuro, which is where I was based for most of the summer, has about 30,000 people, and it's very developed. There's a lot of construction, which means runoff into the ocean. There's a lot of fishing pressure, a lot of nutrients from sewage and things like that. And then Arno is neighboring. It takes about an hour and a half to get there by boat, and there's only about 1,000 people that live there. And it's very underdeveloped, so a lot of those activities that exist in Majuro don't exist in Arno. And because they're right next to each other, they have very similar oceanographic conditions. So sea surface temperature is going to be the same, and they'll be affected by climate change pretty similarly. So it was actually a really unique opportunity. It's kind of a natural laboratory to be able to compare across those two atolls to get an idea of how those local human impacts are affecting coral reefs.
What did you find?
We haven't actually looked at the data yet, so now that I'm back, that's what I'm going to be working on over the next year is crunching the numbers to see if we find a difference that's statistically significant. But I think I can say my impression was, and again, I can't actually prove this yet, but my impression was that I think there's more coral and a higher diversity of coral in Arno, which is the less developed.
We hear a lot about coral reefs around the world that are in trouble because of climate change. How is the health of the Marshall Island reefs?
I was actually pretty impressed by how healthy the reefs were, even in Majuro, where there's a lot of human activity. There were a few reefs that were close to, there's a sewage output, and there's a landfill that has a lot of trash. In a small atoll, it's a huge challenge to figure out what to do with trash, especially now that there's an influx of non-reusable things like plastic, or non-organic, I should say, things like plastic. And so the dive sites that were close to the dump, the landfill, and the sewage outfall, and actually there's a construction project near there too, all in this one area, there wasn't a lot of coral there, which was what we would expect. But most places outside of that area looked pretty healthy. I was pretty impressed by how much coral there was.
What reaction did you get from the local people as a scientist being there studying the reefs?
I think they actually really appreciated having us there, or I hope so. I mean, hopefully it'll further our understanding of the way that people are impacting coral reefs. But the main purpose really is to be able to give this information to the people in the Marshall Islands so that they can use that to make informed decisions in the future.
I understand that you came home with an interesting souvenir of your time there.
Yes, I got a tattoo. I got an outline of the jaws of a shark on the inner side of my arm.
Wow. Why the jaws of a shark?
I have always loved sharks. I was telling somebody earlier, I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with them. I find them fascinating and beautiful, but I'm also a little bit scared of them.
Well, yeah, especially if you're diving in their environment.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, it's one of those things where I'd love to see them, but just it still kind of freaks me out whenever I do. So I've been thinking of kind of getting something as an ode to that for a long time. And actually, the tattoo artist there is the husband of a friend of mine who is Canadian. She's from Vancouver. And she lived in the Marshall Islands for 10 years and married a local. And so I knew the tattoo artist already, and he does really great work. So it was kind of a good opportunity to get a souvenir and also cross something off the list that I've been thinking about for a long time.
Okay. Well, is your research going to take you back to the Marshall Islands?
I hope so. I'm hoping to be able to have the opportunity to go back next year. I'm planning on working on my PhD with the same advisor that I'm with now. And so hopefully I'll have the opportunity to build on the work that I've done this year to the start of my PhD.
Ms. Cannon, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Cannon is a master's student in the Department of Geography at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Coming up next, Out of the Ashes.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.